Let's talk. Talk.
John Brown. Tears for England. Tears for England. Obsession, hope and heartbreak with the England football team. It's a roller coaster story of the last 50 years of England's football team, seen through the eyes of a national press journalist and obsessive fan. Obsession, hope and heartbreak, that's a word for it. I'm delighted to say that Robert Taylor joins me live on the line now. Robert, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Giles.
So, for those who aren't familiar with your what's your background, apart from being, you know, obviously English and a football fan? Why are you so eminently qualified to write this tome of tears, sir?
Well, you've given me the most important thing, is I'm an obsessive football fan. I write for the National Press, write for various outlets like The Telegraph, The Express and The Spectator. But the biggest thing about me and the most important is my obsession over half a century, dare I say, as an England fan.
But I mean, if you're looking for, because other nations perhaps have more the silky skills of the Brazilians, the Italian, you know, the Italians, etc. There are, you know, the doer nature of the Scots, as we see in every tournament. But being an England football fan, is it once again the proof of the expectation over the harsh realities, Robert?
Well, the harsh reality is that we've underperformed as a nation compared to our footballing size. If you think of the strength of the Premier League, if you think about the amount of money that goes into English football, we have definitely underperformed. There is no question about that over the last half century, really since 1966. There are lots of reasons I could give you for that, but the plain bare fact of the matter is we don't go as far in tournaments as others do and as I believe we should.
And the thing is, if you are of our generation, Robert, I think the thing is that because we grew up with, you know, with our parents who all remembered 66. And for those of us who were born just after, this is like, I don't know, discovering El Dorado. It's the golden land that you can see the promised land, but you can't touch it.
You can't, and it, you know, people say, well, look, only one team could win it. Why should it be England? Well, in my lifetime, and presumably yours therefore, Giles, we've seen Denmark win the Euros. We've seen Greece win the Euros. We've seen the Czechoslovakia in 1976. That's what they were still called then. They've won the Euros. So if it's good enough for them, why isn't it good enough for us? We always find a reason to fail. And in 50 years, you would have thought we would have won at least one major tournament by now. We haven't. And that's really what the book is all about. Tears for England over that half century.
And if you look at some of the players, I mean, you know, I think the first World Cup I can really kind of remember was 78 Argentina. I would have been 10, for example. So that was Keegan, Brooking, etc. I mean, didn't even get there, did we, in 78? It was, and having a Scots mother, you must understand that, you know, I remember watching that goal with Archie Gemmell at some ungodly hour in the morning. So therefore, you know, England was a dazzling array of talents who would come to the fore. But, you know, people like Keegan, Brooking, Mick Shannon, and all these players, but Paul Mariner, for goodness sake, you know, these were Steve Coppell, these are great names, but underperforming until the 80s.
Yeah, well, you're my vintage precisely. I was 10 in 78. I remember that Archie Gemmell goal. I remember supporting Scotland as we all did back in 78. We being England, we didn't qualify. Yeah. So my first World Cup with England qualifying, as it would be for you, was 82. Then we had Hand of God, 86. We had that awful penalty shootout, 1990. We had David Beckham being sent off in 98. We had the Golden Generation failing in 2002, 6, 10. And then, you know, we've always got a hard luck story. Is this year, Giles, finally going to be different? Someone said to me on another radio station, it's going to be our year. And I said, well, after 50 years of hurt, I wish I shared your optimism, but I just can't. I've been hurt too many times.
But the thing is, it's hot and cold, because we all remember those stellar performances, you know, in matches that don't tend to matter. 5-1 against the Germans, for example. I mean, if that had been replayed when it kind of mattered, that would help. You know, I mean, it talks about Maradona's Hand of God, but there's Barnes' goal at the Macarena, which, you know, a thing of beauty that nobody remembers. Why do we kind of as is it something in the national psyche that we're almost programmed to go to? And we'll come on to penalties next question. But do we set ourselves up for a fall, Rob?
I don't think we care enough as a nation about the national team. We care far more about club football, and we always have done. Look, I support a team in club football. I'm a West Brom fan for my considerable sins, and I've had absolutely zero luck with that in my lifetime either. But as a nation, we care more about our club teams. And having discussed this a bit with Germans, for example, Giles, I know that an average Bayern Munich fan will care as much about the German national team as about Bayern Munich, whereas your Man City fan, or your, particularly your Liverpool fan, will care far more about their club side than England. And I think that is just something that is quite uniquely English. I'm generalising, but in general, we do care more about club football. And I think that's at the root of our failure on the national level.
And if you think about the way that sort of, and I'm going to get all deep and meaningless here on us, Rob, but you think about the way that football is regarded in the 70s. I mean, nobody from a nice middle-class background goes to football. If you were, Mummy, I want to go and see Chelsea play. You know, they'd be going, tush, here's a different shaped ball. Go and get your face kicked in on a rugby pitch somewhere in Feltham. But you see what I'm saying here? It's not family friendly. I mean, 1982, it may be being played in Spain. Great tournament. The Nanka, et cetera. But you're not getting, England away was not a good prospect for anybody who wasn't perhaps young, male, and with tattoos before they were fashionable.
Yeah, and we forget, don't we, given how peaceful so far, thank goodness, this particular tournament in the US has been, and not a hint of hooliganism. All the England fans tremendously well-behaved, singing songs with the players. Didn't used to be like that. And as you say, in the 80s, the younger generation either won't know this or may have read it in the history books. We were taken out of European club football for 4 or 5 years because of the hooliganism. And that also had a big impact on the England national team. But you're absolutely right, Giles. All of us in the 80s, football was the bad thing to be into. It was about violence. It was about hooliganism. It was the bad thing. And only really after 1990 did it begin that long road to respectability. Now I think it is respectable.
But the thing is, in 1990, and that again, kids, ask your parents, that is the World Cup that changed everything. Because you've got I'm not even talking about on the football field. Des Lynam comes in. Before it had been very interesting boys, World of Sport, Dickie Davis, all that sort of very boring guys in big sheepskin coats, at the touchline, playing the Villa. You see where I'm going with this one, yeah? It was very John Motson, it was very David Coleman. And then you've got Des Lynam, the lounge littered per excellence, with a twinkle in his eye, he's somewhere, he's presenting England. And you've got the three tenors. Now, this was the first time this has ever happened. This is a cultural, it absolutely shakes, isn't it? It's a huge hammer blow that brings football to a culture. You've got the three tenors, Pavarotti, Toto Scarlacci never does anything else apart from this, but he scores that goal. And suddenly football is embraced by the Guardian readers. And also, it doesn't help, doesn't fail, doesn't any bad thing that England do quite well. And then, of course, this is the first big penalty shootout.
Yeah, not only the first big one, the first one ever for England. And, of course, we hadn't prepared. We didn't know what to expect. The Germans had lost a penalty shootout before, had had utter heartache, and had determined in their Germanic way it was never going to happen to them again. And you know what, Giles? It hasn't. But in 1990, we'd never taken penalties before. Poor old Peter Shilton in goal didn't look like he was going to get any near any of them. And Chris Waddle and Stuart Pearce were our fall guys. But in contrast to the Germans, we sort of fetishized that misery and we made pizza ads out of it. We made a West End play out of it. We just got fetishized this misery. Did we prepare for the next one that we were going to get at the Germans? No. 6 years later at Wembley in Euro 96, we lose again to the Germans. And of course, that time it was Gareth Southgate.
But people forget that here comes the anorak, because I know exactly where I was when England played Cameroon, because it was my friend's 21st birthday in Spain. It was a boys' owned party because some girls turned out, they took one look at us and that's where we're going home. And if you remember correctly, England were going out in the quarters. I mean, it was was only a late Lineker penalty. He scored. The whole room I'm watching with several thousand beers and the boys in a beautiful Mediterranean villa, I leap in the air. I mistimed my leap, hit the back of the sofa, fell over, bust my ankle. But everyone else was cheering so much, they didn't realise I was in considerable pain on the floor until literally 5 minutes later. That's how I remember exactly where I was, Robert.
Yeah, and like you, Giles, I remember where I was for all these big matches. I was at uni for the Cameroon. I remember the room we were in. I remember that the following round was the semi against the Germans. Again, I remember the room I was in, the people I was with. This is what England does to us. Whether we win or lose, these big moments, they unite the nation. We remember it.
Unite the nation. We skip 94 because, hey, Taylor. And then, and I was up to speak to somebody the other week about this. We talk about Culture Master 1990, but me gods, 96. I mean, the ultimate England fan experience. It's the middle of Cool Britannia. You've got Oasis Blur going on. You've got Gascoigne in the form of his life. That is a top. We beat the. I mean, it's just you couldn't write the. Well, you could write the Hollywood script, and obviously England would win it. But again, it is that Shakespearean, Rob. It's that tragic flaw, sir.
Well, it is, and it's exactly how I begin my book. So Tears for England starts with Gazza missing the open goal, and that's the only way I can describe it. In the semi-final against the Germans, please, anyone who hasn't seen that, have a look at the golden goal, extra time of 96 versus the Germans. How Gascoigne missed that. With the open goal in front of him, I do describe in the beginning of my book how I think he missed it. I give an interpretation to that, but no one will ever know. I think he got his boot to it, but just scraped off, and the chance for glory was gone. The Shakespearean tragedy, it's still with me 30 years later, Giles, and I still think about it.
And it was 30 years ago last week, wasn't it? It came up in my timeline. It was like, and again, everybody knows where they were at that point. Everybody knows how close we were to doing that. Since then, of course, since those days, we had the golden generation. And, you know, you look at Lampard, Beckham, Scholes, you know, just the whole Gerrard. And you think, how didn't we win? How did we not win with that lot? But again, it goes back to teams rather than personalities. And you look at, and I'll just talk about where I'm sitting now in Spain, because Spain were always the bridesmaids in football. They always looked good in the 80s and the 90s. And you thought, yeah, the quarterfinals, there was, you know, Luis Enrique, you know, there was something going on. But then, of course, Spain, and they support the national team. It's vitally important. And they get behind it, and they start playing in a way that perhaps England wish they could sort of get that same golden generation to have played as well as Spain's golden generation do when they win in South Africa.
Well, very interesting. There's been a documentary on the BBC recently about the golden generation and why they failed. And there's a really interesting piece from Rio Ferdinand, who was our key defender. And he says, we didn't want it as a team. So you had Chelsea players, Man U players, Arsenal players coming together, and they didn't want to share the sort of secrets that might give their opponents an advantage in club football. And Rio actually comes up with a line. He said, I like being with England, but I didn't love being with England. Whereas the Spanish, the French, the Brazilians, it was an honour for them to play for their country. For us, it was, I'm paraphrasing here, but it was more of a chore. They didn't want it enough. And hey, presto, we go out in three quarterfinals in a row. No surprise.
Yes, I've got my theories on that as well, because it was, strangely enough, the weekend after England went out to Portugal, I bumped into them at a beach club in Marbella, and they were celebrating Ashley Cole's stag weekend. And I was like, hang on a second, you guys must have planned this in advance. What are you? And Rio Ferdinand told me to go forth and not come back, but not in those exact words. Put it that way.
Yeah, well, this is it, you see. And if you go forward to 2010, everyone in England fans will remember the goal that wasn't given, Lampard's goal, that should have been given, wasn't given. And 2 days later, I was still in grief. Now, I'm just a fan, right? That's what the book is about, the fan experience, the obsession and the hobby. I'm just a fan, but I was still grieving 2 or 3 days later. Where was Frank? Now, Frank was at Boris Becker's birthday party. That is the German Boris Becker had a birthday party in London 2 or 3 days after that event. There's Lampard looking as happy as Larry. Now, maybe he's just a better, more mature person than I am. I think that's entirely possible. But I do want the players to care as much as I do.
What's the connect like? Because when you're in the stands to the national team, because this is an important point, because you mentioned this. If you look, you know, okay, Jude Bellingham scores a goal against the, you know, Panama, and he runs up and he gives a, you know, hey to the thing. They must have appreciated that, because I don't tend to think there's so much of a. I mean, okay. Stuart Pearce scores that penalty against Spain, right? That's a moment and a half, isn't it? That's demons vanquished in one hit, and, you know, emotional, right? But the connect between, and people don't talk about that enough, the connect between the players and the fan, you know, and the England supporters, not on the screens, not from their VIP boxes, but the guys who go and play. There used to be a bloke I used to work in Great Sutton Street, and there was a breakfast bar, and this guy went to every England match. And he was the guy who owned the breakfast. But it was shut. England playing, they were shut. He was in Kazakhstan or somewhere. So what's the connection like between, you know,
Better now. I was at Wembley for the for very disappointing friendlies in when was it, March, against Japan was the last one I saw, and it's much better. You know, fans and the team and the manager, I think, are really as well. And who do we thank for that? I reckon we thank Gareth Southgate, who'd really changed the culture. Little things, Giles, like the players singing the national anthem. It really matters something to the fans who will belt it out. If we see the players sort of mumbling it or not singing it at all, it makes a difference. And as we've seen with the players on the pitch at the end of the Croatia match, the Panama match, the fans and the players singing together, there is now a real connection in the way best will in the world, golden generation, just did not have that.
And it was wasn't it? We have to get an Italian manager, Capello. We have to get a Swedish manager, Sven. We have to get whatever. And Southgate, he'd been there. He'd been the butt. He knew how much it hurt, because he was, you know, of all, you know, all the 96, they had a pizza advert. I mean, the humiliation, Robert.
Yeah, well, I'm a big Gareth fan, and a lot of people say, look, you know, he failed in two finals. Well, at least he got us to two finals, far more than anyone else has done for the last 60 years. So I'm a Gareth fan. He did four tournaments. He'd had his time. He needed to go. I'm also, so far, really pleased with Thomas Tuchel. But the point is, we can thank Gareth for that change in culture, that the England team now matters more than 10 years ago.
And then there is... And we wouldn't have talked about this 20 years ago, not even 10 years ago, because it was seen as a running joke by Benny Hill, the women's team. Now, in a parallel universe. We are in a parallel universe. You know, women's football has none of the baggage that the men's game has, and without going all smash in nicely, it is the beautiful game. It really is.
Well, absolutely. So I've dedicated my book is about my life supporting the men's football team. And you know, I make no apology for that. It's just because men's football in the 70s and 80s was the only football around. But I have a chapter in the book entirely dedicated to the Lionesses. And I talk about how the Lionesses winning those two successive Euro tournaments really did bring me the kind of joy, the kind of release that I've been yearning for all these years from seeing the men win something, but haven't yet. The Lionesses are the real deal. They've been fantastic.
And not only that, it's that, you know, it's not a marketing thing. Because you cannot, I mean, Spain, Real Madrid against Barcelona, Clásico, Femenino, 96,000 fans. That's not a giveaway. That is having big inroads. So that, you know, and so to see something that isn't manufactured, that families can enjoy, a new generation of Lingard supporters can go without any of that. And you must have, you know, you must see that. And to a certain extent, it has changed as a fan for you, Robert, you know, from those days of like the late 80s, thankfully, to experiences we now have.
Yeah, well, people forget that the FA did not allow official women's football matches for about 50 years.
Oh, yeah, I spoke to one of the daughters of the women who went out there and played, of course.
Yeah, so I think mid-1920s to 1972, the FA did not allow official women's matches. So the women were 50 years behind the men. They've played catch-up tremendously well. I was at Wembley to see the English women against the German women a couple of years ago. Fantastic. Packed Wembley Stadium, full house. And it was a marvellous experience. Long may the Lionesses bring us joy, even if the men don't.
So, we happen to have a little bit of football going on at the moment. Do we build... Because every time England beats somebody, we're going to win the World Cup. I mean, it's great to be... you see, now the listeners can't see that... It is great to see a performance. But you go, and somebody said, I mean, you go through the ringing of the existential soul, Robert. It, you know, games that we should absolutely trash somebody with, the 0-0 draw, all one moment of, or 2 minutes of brilliance for Bellingham, and you think, oh, why do we do this to ourselves?
Well, someone said to me on another channel just 2 days ago, we're going to do it this year. And I said to him, look, I love your optimism. I want to share it. But I've been hurt so many times that I cannot share. I predicted before the tournament semi-final, Giles. And even that might be a little bit ambitious because that would almost certainly mean we have to get past Brazil in the quarterfinal. And I can tell you, it's a sad, sad record of English, a record you don't want. We have never beaten one of the world's major teams in a knockout away from home. We have to do that to get to the semi-final. I reckon it's going to be our year, but the semi-final might sadly be our limit.
All my Spanish friends are saying, yeah, but if you beat Dr. Congo, DR Congo, then you've got Mexico in the Azteca, yeah, at altitude, and yeah, they're on a roll, and you're going to have how many thousand crazed Mexicans, you know, and it, yeah, I mean, short of being conquistadors, I mean, we've got a bad enough, you know, we've got a bad enough record as it is, but you know, at altitude in Mexico, an interesting. But was that, is that quarter? I'm not sure how many games we got. Is that semi-finals? Is that quarter-finals?
No, so Mexico in Mexico will be the round of 16, and yeah, I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah.
That's going to be a hellish match. If we get through that, I mean, we should still beat Mexico, but in Mexico at altitude,
I'm thinking
really tough.
I'm thinking Peter Benelli. I'm thinking the cat. I'm thinking, you know, that great picture of, you see, these are the gods that we grew up with. You know, Pele and Bobby Moore, that iconic picture. And you know, that's what our fathers, you know, had to cheer. You know, are we going to have something to cheer, Robert, or is it going to be the next one?
Okay, reasons to be cheerful. Bellingham's on fire. Bellingham is on fire. You can see the desire. You can see he's world class on his day. Harry Kane, for goodness sake, he's fit at last. He wasn't in the last Euros, from my point of view. We've also got Declan Rice, who I think is a world class player. Defence is leaky. Defence worries me. But there are reasons to be cheerful. Could we finally beat Brazil? I'd frankly just settle for that in the quarterfinal and getting past Mexico in the round of 16. I'd settle for that, Giles.
What are you hoping that people are going to learn? Is it the warts and all, or the is it a thousand dodgy pork pies from here to Guadalajara? What are you hoping that people are going to learn from this one?
Well, what I hope is just fall in love with the English team all over again and see that you can support your club side and the England national side equally. It doesn't mean either or. If you can do that, if we learn that, if we fall in love and we start believing, that would be a great result.
Rob, I've actually got me excited and going. The book is called Tears for England. Listeners, go to our own virtual bookstore, click on the brilliant front cover, and it'll be winging its way to you. It's by Robert Taylor. Rob, if people want to find you online, presumably you have a social media presence. You've got a website.
Yeah,
where can people find you?
On X, I'm at Taylor, that's T-A-Y-L-O-R, columnist, that's my X one, and Robert Taylor, author, on Facebook. Those are the two that I do. I'm somewhere on Instagram, but I can't remember what my handle is.
I'm sure you'll pop up if you put them in. The book is called Tears for England. It's by Robert Taylor. Robert, it's been absolutely brilliant to speak to you this morning.
It's been lovely to be with you, Giles. Thank you so much.